G8 and His Battle Aces, Squadron of Corpses, by Robert Hogan, Chapter 5. Staffel of the Dead. G8 groaned. For a long time he glared straight ahead of him into nothingness. He didn't bother to turn at the sound of footsteps behind him. Didn't seem to hear them in fact. Then came a voice in a hoarse, tense whisper. What's this about a bunch of Heinies coming back to life? This white and black magic stuff we just heard about, the voice demanded uncertainly. The men of the 113th asked me to come over and find out about it. They're jittery as a bunch of old maids at an ice cream social, sir. G8 whirled to face the officer. He could see he was no green replacement who would be easily frightened. Yet his face was a queer color. About his forehead and around his eyes, where goggles shielded him from the sun and the wind, his skin was white. The rest of his countenance was tanned. But under that tan was a strange, ashen hue that gave him a queer look. Who are you? G8 demanded. And where did you come from? From the 113th, the other repeated. I am First Lieutenant Johnson, Senior Flight Commander. We just received news about that note. He pointed to the slip of paper in G8's hand. One of our boys was over here just returning from leave, when the note was dropped. We'd like to know more about it, Captain. The men are up on their ear. G8 gave a short nod. Yes, he said in a low voice, I see. But what will I tell them? Johnson insisted. I've got to tell them something. Tell them not to worry, G8 said. We'll take care of this. Forget it. He turned abruptly and strode into the apartment end of the hangar. Nippy and Bull followed silently, closed the door behind them. G8 glanced at his wristwatch. A little after 10, he muttered. And those four dead Jerry Aces are supposed to fly over at 1. He whirled and snapped an order to Bull. Jump in the car, and hurry down to the library in Paris. Get me that book that your cousin wrote about these witch doctors, or whatever they call themselves in Haiti. And don't spare the horses. The door of the apartment closed behind Bull. A minute later the purr of the powerful motor and the click of gears. Bull was gone like a shot. G8 paced the floor. The last message was lying on the library table. Each time he passed it he glanced down at it. He lit one cigarette after another. Nippy watched him silently. G8 shot a glance at him. He was about to say, well, you seem to have the wind taken out of your sails this time, Nippy. But he didn't for some reason that he couldn't explain. And as though Nippy understood the words without hearing them, he shook his head in a baffled, disgusted manner. It's sure got me stopped, he confessed. Doggone, if it doesn't beat anything I ever saw before. G8 took a long breath and nodded. His teeth clenched. His fists tightened into hard knots of flesh and bone. Yes, he admitted. But we've got to go through with it some way. He stepped to the phone. Well, he said, here's where I break the heart of the old boy. I might as well tell him what we're up against so he'll know what to expect. He put a call through to the general. A moment later G8 heard his voice. G8 speaking, he said. Plenty of bad news. On my return to the field just now, I found that another note had been dropped. This time, unfortunately, it picked up before Nippy and Bull could reach it. Some of the pilots who read it left the field before Nippy and Bull could stop them. I'm afraid the news is spreading like wildfire. The death penalty of course was just a bluff and we couldn't expect to even threaten the men with it now. I don't know what we can do to keep this news from spreading. As a matter of fact I am sure, General, we can't stop it. Not now. He heard the general gasp. Good Lord, he breathed into the mouthpiece, and it sounded like a fervent prayer. Yes, G8 said profoundly. Good Lord have mercy on us, now that the news is out. What have you in mind to do now? The general asked with faint hope in his voice. Only one thing I can think of at the present moment, G8 said. I'm going to try to study up on this stuff a little bit. I'm going to see if I can't learn something about voodooism, myself. And when those four German aces who have been brought back to life come over the lines at 1 o'clock, we'll be there to meet them. Frankly, General, we're not in the best condition for air fighting, but we'll be there just the same. What did the last note say? The general asked hoarsely. G8 read it aloud quickly. And, he finished. I'm afraid we're going to lose four good men, in the places of these four German aces. You might tell all airfield commanders to keep the news quiet. And will you kindly issue orders that you are to be notified at once if anything strange happens to the men of any squadron, particularly those with good records? You mean if the men should begin to have symptoms like Randall had? The general asked. Exactly, G8 said. I believe that's all for now. I'll let you know of any further developments. You can call me here as soon as you get any news. I don't expect it will be long. Ellie hung up the phone and turned to the little phonograph. The repeater disc was on his favorite record. He wound the spring tightly, put the needle in place. The rhythmic, jazzy strains of Rag in the Scale blasted out. The record was well worn from much use, but it still furnished the fast tempo stimulus that seemed to make his brain work in time to it. He paced the floor again, smoking more cigarettes. Listen for that purr of the long roadster. It came at last. Bull burst into the door of the apartment with a book in hand. I hungrily G8 took the volume, glanced at the title, Checkerboard Magic. The name of the author was on the cover, Stephen L. Martin. Without a word, G8 sat down and plunged into the first page. As he raced through it, he caught here and there significant phrases. Bull's cousin told of his experiences in studying the white and black arts on that island of mystery. He told what he had seen of the living dead men, and his description of them tallied exactly with the description of Von Grial, as they had seen them a few hours ago. Everything G8 read seemed only to add to the horror of the situation. He felt a presence behind him. Nippy was looking over his shoulder. The battle terrier Ace pointed to a certain sentence. "That's a hot one," he chuckled. "So these voodoo doctors lose their power if they eat spices or salt." "H.M.," mused G8. "That's a crazy superstition. As a matter of fact, the whole thing looks..." He stopped short. His mind flashed to the last sentence in the book in which Bull's cousin stated the whole business was bunk, although he couldn't explain it. He thought also of what had happened to Stephen L. Martin. And due to his cautious nature, rather than superstition, he said no more. Nippy was staring at the last message. He looked up with the first trace of a grin his face had shown for some time. "Say," he said, "this would be hot. If we could force a bunch of spices and salt down the throat of this guy Crowley, who the note says is behind all this, that might bust his pants, I mean trance wide open." G8 nodded. He, too, had smiled, but very faintly. Then he grew serious. "I wouldn't say that was such a laugh either," he ventured. "I've reached the point where I try anything at least once, maybe twice." The phonograph ran down. Bull's fear, like the spring on the phonograph, was beginning to diminish. In fact, he had enough presence of mind to wind it without being asked. Then the kitchen door opened and Battle bowed. "Did I hear you say something about taking a ride at one, sir?" he asked. G8 turned on him and nodded angrily. "Battle," he said, "you've been eavesdropping again. But it's true. How about an early lunch?"
"Yes, sir. I anticipated that. It's ready now, sir, if you care to eat."
G8 closed the book and got up.
"Okay," he said.
"I wouldn't say these morning exercises were much to a fellow in appetite. But we'd better eat, just to keep in practice anyway." The three ate in silence. In a few moments they were finished. The plates of G8 and Nippy were only half emptied. Bull's was cleaned.
"Well," Nippy observed as they went back into the living room, "I see you're getting back to normal, Bull. It would take a lot to make you miss a meal."
G8 glanced at his watch. "Just past 12. He pushed the button four times on the wall, and in answer, three hissos barked outside the hangar. At the door, G8 faced his battle aces.
"This time it's going to be different," he said. "We won't bother trying to get these Germans to land behind the Yank lines. In fact, we'll try to keep them from doing it.
These four German aces are supposed to have been brought back from the dead. I'm not arguing about that. But we're going out now to do our darndest to put them back where they came from. Let's go." They climbed into their ships and thundered into the air. As 1 o'clock approached, they were swinging high above the lines, thundering along in an easterly course. G8 had raised his glasses and constantly searched the air. Abruptly he stopped the sweeping movement of his powerful binoculars and focused them on four bird-shaped spots that seemed to be hanging in the sky ahead of them to the northwest. He punched on, drew nearer. The four ships came very close. There was no astonishment written on his face at what he saw now. In fact, he had expected it. Ghastly, putty-like faces, those four. Faces and eyes that carried no hint of actual life, no movement. Dead men flew the sky lanes. To be continued.